Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on water improvements in Rio Dell, State Senator Mike McGuire's El Nino Town Hall, and Trinity County improves its emergency communication system. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with news on the Anderson Fire, south of Covelo. A fire broke out south of Covelo today, Wednesday, August 5th, during the noon hour, named the Anderson Fire, which quickly grew to 205 acres. Evacuation warnings were initially put in place but have since been lifted. Forward progress was stopped by firefighters, including CAL FIRE air attack, around 3 p.m., and containment was reported at 10% and climbing shortly thereafter. A truly incredible effort by our local firefighters today. Next is a short report on today's cannabis enforcement activity by a helicopter in Humboldt County. The Howard Buffett Foundation-funded NCCSC helicopter used by the Humboldt Sheriff's Office for cannabis enforcement was active in the Willow Creek area of Humboldt County today. Multiple licensed farmers reported hovering in unique rotational patterns by the helicopter, with some low passes over individual properties lasting 3 minutes. In some cases, growers were being visited for the second time in recent weeks. The helicopter was active on both sides of the Trinity River, with notable activity in the Panther Ridge area. It was also spotted briefly in Bridgeville. Next is news from Trinity County. A 4.5 magnitude earthquake struck Trinity County today near Island Mountain, close to the Humboldt Trinity and Mendocino County line. There were no immediate reports of damage, but the shallow depth of the earthquake meant it was easily felt in nearby areas. From the City of Ukiah. The City of Ukiah has released a revised annexation footprint titled the Sapling 2.0, advancing the Sapling proposal shared earlier this year with two key changes. The update reflects continued community input and further city analysis. Updated maps, an address lookup tool, and background materials are available at the city's website. The Sapling 2.0 option makes two changes to the initial sapling shape. It adds the Brush Street Triangle, an approximately 70-acre area just north of Ukiah's current city limits, and removes approximately 15 acres of land currently under Williamson Act protection. The Brush Street Triangle's inclusion in the Sapling 2.0 shape was made at the request of property owners within the triangle, an undeveloped section of property bordered by the city and the freeway. The area has long been identified as one with high service needs, and bringing it into the city will relieve pressure on county resources while allowing the city to utilize municipal services that are more appropriate to address demand in the area. Additionally, the City of Ukiah adjusted the proposed annexation boundaries to remove an identified area of land that is currently under the Williamson Act, which is a state program that offers protections for keeping land in agricultural or open space use. The land was originally mapped as part of the county's designated Master Tax Sharing Agreement footprint, which is why the parcels were initially included in the annexation maps. But upon further review and until the city has adopted its own Williamson Act program, city officials are recommending exclusion of those parcels at this time. Community members are encouraged to review the proposed maps and watch the city's revised informational video. Background materials, frequently asked questions, and additional information is available at cityofukiah.com/annexation. From the Hoopa Valley Tribe. The Hoopa Valley Public Utilities District celebrated the grand opening of its new NTIA data center on July 17th, marking a major milestone in the Hoopa Valley Tribe's efforts to expand reliable, high-speed internet access throughout the Hoopa Valley Indian Reservation, Willow Creek, and Trinity County. More than 50 community members, staff, Project partners and local leaders attended the event. Guests toured the new facility, enjoyed a barbecue, and heard remarks from Hoopa Valley Tribal Vice Chairman Jordan Haley. The NTIA Data Center is a key part of the tribe's broadband project, which will support fiber-to-the-home connections for residences and businesses across the Hoopa Valley Indian Reservation and surrounding areas. The facility will house the critical equipment needed to operate the fiber network while providing a dedicated home for Acorn Connected, the tribe's internet service provider. The facility was designed by a regional architect and constructed by ACGC of Eureka. Hoopa design elements, wood accents, and artwork from local artists were incorporated throughout the building to create a facility that reflects the culture and identity of the Hoopa Valley tribe. From the Eureka Police Department. Over the past several days, personnel from the Eureka Police Department Patrol Division developed information regarding the whereabouts of Jonathan Marks, who was wanted in connection with an attempted homicide in Arcata. Working in collaboration with the Humboldt County Drug Task Force and the Eureka Police Department Criminal Investigations Unit, investigators confirmed Marks was staying at a motel on the 2100 block of Broadway. On August 4th, at approximately 6:47 p.m., Eureka Police Department patrol officers and a detective conducted a coordinated enforcement operation, resulting in the successful apprehension of Marks without incident. Marks was booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on the Ramey warrant for attempted murder and an additional felony warrant. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. Trinity County has made progress in improving the reliability of its emergency communication system, KMUD News reports. At the Tuesday, August 4th, Trinity Board of Supervisors meeting, Trinity County Sheriff Tim Saxon shared an update on improvements to the county's emergency radio communication system. According to a press release from May released by the county, Trinity County Emergency Communications Infrastructure has, quote, experienced reliability challenges due to a combination of aging equipment, limited funding resources, evolving technology needs, and a history of incremental repairs over time, end quote. The press release went on to detail that Trinity County had seen escalating reliability issues with its emergency communication system since late 2025. The county also needed to replace a failed duplexer, which is a component allowing a single antenna to be both the transmitter and receiver of radio traffic. At the August 4th Board of Supervisors meeting, Trinity County Sheriff Tim Saxon shared positive updates on the county's progress fixing the previously broken and unreliable emergency communication system.
Just a couple of quick things to update you on our progress with the radio emergency communication system. As you were briefed at the last meeting, I believe, the duplexers were installed. So far at this point in time, my feedback on that is that the service has improved quite a bit. We have not received any negative replies from any of the users of the system at this time. I reached out to a couple of fire department individuals, and they have confirmed that the reception has improved, the page outs have improved. All the fire department personnel have been advised and given paperwork to note any discrepancies or negativity and report that back in writing to the sheriff's office, to our consultant, to be able to track and keep information on file so they can report that to our technicians with Day Wireless so that we can move forward and actually track any type of deficiencies in the system and try and fix those. The new base radios have been ordered, as you've been told in the past, and they should be here this month and installed this month. And so we're looking forward to that to improve, again, the radio situation. Along with that, I'm told that when those do go in, because they're a new type of radio, we will be able to actually remove a couple of the antennas that are up on the system right now. And that separation by changing out those radios will also improve the dispatch capabilities within the Oregon Mountain repeater system.
Based on the report by Sheriff Tim Saxon, Trinity County's emergency radio communication system is on the mend. With installation of new duplexers, ordering of new base radios, and removal of old antennas, Trinity County residents can rest a little easier knowing emergency personnel have more consistent communications. It is also reassuring to hear local fire departments in Trinity County reporting better radio reception during this active fire season. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Warm ocean temperatures are likely to intensify an El Nino event, and experts at an online meeting hosted by Senator Mike McGuire warned of potential impacts. Daniel Mintz reports.
There's a marine heat wave going on in the Pacific Ocean, and it could supercharge an oncoming El Nino event, prompting State Senator Mike McGuire and a panel of experts to urge preparations for what could be a wild winter. McGuire kicked off an August 4th online town hall on a forecasted Super El Nino by saying climate scientists are raising the alarm bell about it. El Nino is a cyclical weather event that warms the eastern Pacific Ocean. This time around, it's coming on top of a marine heat wave, and that's why experts say odds favor development of a Super El Nino. McGuire said there's a, quote, real potential for larger and more destructive winter storms, significant flooding events, ocean-based heat waves, which we're already starting to see off the Pacific, and enhanced summertime monsoonal moisture. Commenting on what makes this year's El Nino different, climate scientist Dr. Daniel Swain talked about the unprecedented ocean warmth and the accuracy of predictions made so far.
We've never seen ocean temperatures in the eastern tropical Pacific as warm as they are today in the region that matters for El Nino. And we expect that trajectory of ocean temperatures that are warmer in that region than we've seen before at different times of year to continue into the fall and winter. So when we say the potential for a record strength El Nino event, that is literally what we mean. We don't necessarily mean record rainfall in California or record high sea level, even though those things could occur. We're fundamentally talking about the warmth in the equatorial Pacific Ocean, and it really does look like we are headed for a rather extraordinary event, and arguably we are already there based on where we would typically be at this time of year. So we're sort of validating predictions, right? We're talking about how things were in the winter and spring. We thought we might be headed in this direction. Confidence grew up to the present. The real world has mostly gone according to predictions up through early August that were made as long ago as March. So the real world has cooperated, if you will, with those predictions thus far. If the real world continues to track those predictions, we will likely see an event that rivals or exceeds what we've seen historically.
Swain said he's, quote, fairly shocked, frankly, by the numbers that are coming out of these most recent predictions and observations, too, actually. The conditions could, quote, open the storm door in the winter through early spring months. And Swain said, quote, I personally have started to clear my calendar from January through March this coming year to be available if things get a little bit wild. Dr. Mark Merrifield, director of the Scripps Center for Climate Change Impacts and Adaptation, said the ingredients for a wild winter, like high sea level, are already in place and others are shaping up.
As a sort of unlucky coincidence, the tidal cycle is also going to be at a peak around the end of this year. So tides tend to vary over long time periods, 18.6 years, 4.4 years. We're at the peaks of those cycles. And around the Christmas time, we'll be seeing some strong, strong tides or super tides or king tides that will superpose on this rising sea level and El Nino event to give us the high sea levels. The other thing that's fairly certain with El Ninos is that we're going to see high waves. It's not exactly clear where on the coast these will arrive, but usually the entire California coast sees these higher waves as the storm track is perturbed by the El Nino. So on top of the high sea levels, high waves will be coming this winter. That combination, high waves, high sea levels, high tides, and as Dr. Swain mentioned, high rainfall, will contribute to considerable coastal flooding, intrusion of salt water into the groundwater, and coastal erosion.
Answering an audience question about potential impacts in Humboldt County, former Humboldt weather anchor Mark Tamayo, now the chief meteorologist at KTVU Fox 2, related what could happen in the near future to what's happened in the past.
In 1982, 1983, kind of like it seems like the banner year of the impacts of El Nino, the North Coast, 161% of average. The Bay Area, 197% of average. The Central Coast, 207% of average. And Southern California, 210% of average. So keep in mind, to get average, that's a lot of rainfall. And when you're leaping over that by, say, the North Coast, 161% of average, that is a lot of rain. And of course, a lot of this depends on how the frequency of these storms in a small amount of time and just the impacts that could be doubling up with, say, with a two-week span. You know, I mentioned 82, 83, 161% of average. 2015, 2016, it was 116% of average up on the North Coast. So you see this variability, and I wish, you know, we're so used to looking at our phone and getting an exact precise forecast of what's going to happen in my neighborhood tomorrow. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what's going to happen, but we just keep saying there's the potential, especially with what's developing right now, that there's an increased likelihood of above normal rainfall.
The panelists emphasized that at this point, only potential effects can be discussed, and the situation will be better assessed as forecasts continue into the late summer and fall months. Overhanging the discussion is human-caused climate change, and Swain said storms and higher sea levels are, quote, a glimpse into our warmer future. He added, quote, I think that's maybe the most constructive way to think about why having this conversation now is important. Not just for this year, but for years to come. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Riodel has several ongoing water system improvement projects and a few more in the planning stages, KMUD News reports. While many in southern Humboldt have heard about mandatory water restrictions currently being placed on citizens of Redway, it is not all doom and gloom for Humboldt County's municipal water systems. The city of Riodel has been working on a water distribution improvement project. At the Tuesday, August 4th City Council meeting, a staff report detailed progress so far and which sections of the water distribution improvements will come online soon. Improvements include a new 500,000-gallon water tank and replacement crossings for the water system across Highway 101.
Yes, next up, the water distribution system improvement project. So we are getting closer to the end of construction with the as-awarded bid items. The city does plan to add additional items utilizing its own funding to implement more of the project than the available grant dollars. And we've just been working with the contractor to agree on pricing for that. That additional work will include more hydrants, valves, and section of piping. We've been working closely with the city and Randy to determine the city priority items. The new 500,000-gallon water tank is substantially built, and hopefully they'll be turning it online in the next several weeks. They just finished the last of the shims for the tank. And we just worked with Randy to figure out the operations and make a few modifications to the piping for limiting shutdown time for the city, so to avoid that. And then lastly, the Highway 101 crossings all went really well, and the contractor was able to install all the pipes. They do have just one left pressure test, but that work went really well, and we're excited to see all the progress.
The staff report to the Riodel City Council also detailed a water project to retrofit current water pipes under the Eel River and to remove water pipes from the Highway 101 bridge that crosses the Eel River in Riodel. The project would be primarily grant-funded, including with FEMA Hazard Mitigation Assistance grants, with about 75% of funding anticipated in the coming months. The long-planned project has been stuck at the 60% design phase since May of 2024.
So this is the Yellow Crossing Pipeline retrofit project. So the project stands at 60% design status, and it has been with Cal OES and FEMA for review for the last 2 years. And over that time, they've asked us a couple questions. We've responded. We kind of kept it going. The state is working to extend some grant deadlines. So, this is one of those grant programs that we get the least information about. We can ask as many questions as we want. We don't tend to get a lot of information like, and will you approve those documents? And what might we hear from you? And it's a lot of vague information, but anticipating what we're calling phase two funding, hopefully in the next couple of months. That's the latest update that we got. So that phase two funding would cover the remaining design work that needs to be done, and then also fund 75% of the construction. We do have a funding application in with the state board for that remaining 25%, but this one's kind of been on hold for a while, but we're hopeful that it'll move forward. And then that essentially will be a directionally drilled pipeline under the Eel River, and then it will connect over to the Metropolitan Wells. So you're not depending on the bridge and the existing pipeline in the bridge for your backup water supply.
It's good to hear public projects moving in the right direction in Humboldt County during 2026. The city of Riudel also discussed plans to replace additional existing sewer mains, including ongoing work on Painter Street. We'll keep tabs on Riudel's ongoing water projects. But for now, the new 500,000-gallon replacement tank is coming online soon, with likely construction on water pipe retrofits close behind. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Palestinians hold a mass funeral for those killed by a devastating strike early in the Gaza War. KPFA reports.
Crowds of Palestinians gathered to mourn 112 people whose remains were recovered from beneath the rubble Tuesday. The victims, including 44 children, 37 women, 9 elderly people and 7 people with disabilities, belonged to 2 large extended families, the Abu Sharia and Hassan Hassaina families. The remains were recovered over the past 3 weeks by Palestinian civil defense crews with assistance from the International Committee of the Red Cross. Taysir Al-Dehshan is director of civil defense in Gaza City.
We have thousands of people still buried beneath the rubble. One of our greatest challenges is the yellow line, where we are unable to operate. We need coordination to allow our crews into those areas to recover the bodies. We also face a severe shortage of machinery and equipment.
What little we have is worn out and falling apart. Some of our vehicles have been in service since
1994. Since a massive Israeli airstrike struck the two families' homes in November 2023, grieving relatives have waited to lay their loved ones to rest. Zuhdi Abu Sharia, a grandfather who lost 6 of his grandchildren in the attack, was finally able to bury them today.
They are my grandchildren. All I can say is, we belong to God, and to Him we return. My message to the world is this: stop this oppression and genocide. You always speak of freedom, democracy, and compassion. But where is that compassion? The youngest was Rajwa, a 1.5-year-old girl. The oldest was Zudi, who was in secondary school. They were the children of my two sons.
The funeral comes amid renewed hopes for an end to Israel's war on Gaza, following Hamas's agreement to disarm. But Palestinians in Gaza continue to endure airstrikes and evacuation orders as Israel presses ahead with operations it says are targeting Hamas fighters. This week, Nikolai Miladinov, appointed by President Donald Trump to oversee the Board of Peace, met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The parties were reportedly given 14 days to begin implementing provisions of the ceasefire agreement brokered by Trump in October of last year. Here at the Al-Mejaida displacement camp in Al-Mawasi along the coast of Khan Yunis, families are hoping for meaningful change that will finally ease their suffering. Karim Al-Mejaida is an elderly Palestinian displaced from the area.
We've repeatedly heard promises of change and several ceasefire agreements have been announced. But nothing has changed on the ground. The attacks and assassinations continue. These promises mean nothing unless we see concrete action, such as allowing displaced Palestinians to return to Rafah and eastern Khan Yunis, or putting the technocratic committee to work on the ground. Every time we hear Trump announce something and Netanyahu reject it, or the other way around.
As of Tuesday, Israeli media reported that Israel may suspend its targeted killings of Hamas members and subsequent airstrikes in Gaza for 2 weeks, following a request from Miladinov during his visit to Tel Aviv. However, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel would not withdraw from its current positions in Gaza until Hamas had fully disarmed. His remarks appeared to contradict the agreement recently announced by U.S. President Donald Trump, casting further doubt on what had been seen as a potential breakthrough toward ending the war. For Pacifica Radio, KPFA, I am Rami El-Mighari, in Gaza.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Biana Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us at KMUD News on social media, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingtao, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in